welcome to this week's Big Boat Interview. This week it's the famous Salone del Mobile Furniture Fair, and many yacht owners will be jetting over to Milan to check out the latest collections and pieces for their yachts and private homes. Charlotte and the team were there to launch our latest interiors book with a bang. Every year, this valuable compendium features the very best in yacht design, and this year's, our seventh edition, is no different, packed with new trends and design inspiration with a directory of the best specialist artisans and suppliers to help you get the look. You can pick up this year's edition on shop.boatinternational.com/shop. Back to the podcast, and this week, seeing as we're celebrating exceptional craft, we thought we'd play this interview from earlier in the year when Charlotte caught up with one of our Artistry and Craft Awards winners, Paul Duby. He's a true master of his craft, a woodcarver for over 40 years, and most recently created several beautiful hand-carved wooden panels for Winch Design's 70-metre Amoa. He's a fascinating man who shares how he got into the superyacht industry, talks about the death of the antiques industry in London following 9/11, the lack of master craftsmen in his field, and explains just quite how much blood, sweat and toil goes into some of the sensational pieces he's made for on board. This week's episode is sponsored by KVH, the service which creates innovative connectivity solutions for customers on sea, land and air around the globe. KVH is a global leader in mobile connectivity, content and value-added services with technology designed to enable a mobile world and keep mariners always connected. To find out more, visit www.kvh.com. So I'm here today with Paul Duby, who was highly commended by the judges of the recent Boat Artistry and Craft Awards. And we're going to discuss his work, really, and how he got into it. So that was my first question, Paul. How did you get into woodworking?
I think it's something I always wanted to do from being a really young kid. My mum, when I was really, really young, they bought me like a woodworking tool set, and she said she could leave me in the garden all day long with a couple of bits of wood and some nails and screws, and I'd put them together one way, take them apart and put them together another way, and she wouldn't hear a peep out of me all day long. At school, I always wanted to be a cabinet maker. When I left school, I applied for cabinet making apprenticeships, but never got any replies from my letters. Mm. And then one day I got a reply saying we'd lost your letter in our filing system, and there's an opportunity for an apprentice woodcarver. It's yours if you want it. And I actually turned them down because I was on a carpentry and joinery apprenticeship at the time. But that sort of offering me the apprenticeship in woodcarving sort of got me interested in that sort of side of things. Mm. A friend of mine, his mum was teacher in history of art, and so she started talking to me and showing me sort of, you know, sort of architectural ornament and stuff like that. I just picked up some tools and started having a go and really enjoyed it, and it just went from there. I went to an evening class and did some wood carving in an evening class, and the guy that ran it said, you could be quite good at this. There's an art school in London that did a full-time carving course. You ought to apply and get on the course. So that's what I did. I applied. I went down for an interview and got accepted to the Sitting Gears of London Art School. Mm. And ended up on their two-year carving course, and then never looked back from there, really.
It's amazing. So why did you turn down the apprenticeship when you were first kind of offered it?
I think it was the sort of, we'd entered the recession of the late, you know, the Margaret Thatcher recession of 79, 80, that sort of period. Mm. By that time I'd left school and I needed to have a job. My mum couldn't support me not doing anything. So the only job that I managed to find was this apprenticeship in carpentry and joinery. And I was already sort of 6 months into that. And I just felt that it was the right thing to do to stay in that apprenticeship and have that as a really good grounding. I must admit, I was getting bored of carpentry and joinery that quickly, but yeah. I just felt it was right to stay and have that as a really good grounding for whatever I did afterwards. So that's why, the company that offered me that actually went bust within about a year, I think. So no. I think I made the right decision.
Yeah, absolutely. And how old were you when you were saying, going back to the beginning, you were tiny when you kind of first started playing with these things? Like, you know, were you under 10 years old or was this, you know?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, I was probably 4, 5, 6, something like that. I was born in East London, in East Ham, right. And we lived there till I was 7, and then we moved out to Bury St Edmunds in Suffolk. Mm. And it was in London that I had they bought me this tool set as a present. I must have asked for it, and yeah, we had like a little concrete garden out the back of the house, and yeah, and my mum used to leave me out there in the summer with my bits of wood and my tools, and I can always remember my tool set. I kept bits of it for years. I haven't got any of it now, but yeah, so I would have been quite young, probably 5, 6, I would have thought.
Yeah. And what is it you love about, you know, carving and wood in particular as a medium? Because I was thinking, you know, being such a kind of, you know, old material, it's maybe not the trendiest if there are other people working with kind of resin and things like that. So what is it that you love about wood?
It's difficult to say. I love I was terrible at metalwork at school, but I just have this natural affinity with it almost. I enjoy its feel. I enjoy the way you can cut and shape it. And when I was at art school, I was once called by my lecturer a natural born wood carver.
Really?
And maybe it's just that I have this sort of natural ability with it and natural affinity, but I do love working it, and I've never seen myself doing anything else or
really
changing anything. I've always loved what I do. I got bored very quickly of normal joinery and carpentry and stuff, but I love the sculptural element, the ornament side of it, and carving flowers and making them look natural and delicate and what, you know, I love all of that. Mm. So maybe it's just a natural thing for me.
And the designs, because, you know, looking on your site, these incredibly beautiful, you know, sort of quite traditional and sometimes a bit different flowers and things like that, do you always design them or do other people design them? How much of the kind of visuals of it do you come up with?
It really depends. A lot of times I'll work for designers, you know, like other job designers and stuff, where they have a concept, an idea, and they're pretty fixed on it. And so you have to sort of really work what they've come up with. But I'll always add or try and persuade them into what I think the wood will allow you to do or change or look better and they normally give me that sort of flexibility to sort of enhance the design in that way. But often, yeah, you often have designs that you're given to work to. But then, you know, there are other times when, you know, you're given an idea and you're allowed to sort of draw it out and design it and things. So that's quite nice to do that.
I was just going to say, you know, talking about designs and things, what's the most complicated or the hardest thing you have ever had to do? And have you had any kind of weird requests that have just been impossible to do?
I can't remember anything that's absolutely impossible. Well, I did have an architect's drawing once, and he was adamant that I carved it exactly how, as his drawing was, and I kept trying to point out that he hadn't allowed for any thickness of timber and it was actually impossible to carve it in wood how he'd drawn it. But he couldn't see that, and so I had to carve a pattern for him, and eventually he was okay about it.
Does that happen quite often, that people kind of don't understand how things translate to the medium and that you have to kind of guide them with what they've done?
Yeah, that does happen quite often. And, you know, once you get to know a client really well, they trust you and they understand how you need to work, or how the timber needs to work. And so that becomes sort of a natural part of the job. But yeah, often you have to try and sort of lead people about how you can actually physically make it. But also that it's, in terms of design and stuff like that, a lot of people don't really understand good design that well sometimes. And it's trying to point out what a really nice piece of design looks like and what a really bad bit of design looks like. And often people these days don't seem to see a difference. And that's the most frustrating part of my work, I suppose, nowadays. And I think, you know, doing a design properly, it can add a little bit of cost to do it properly. And that also then becomes a bit of a factor sometimes. So it can be frustrating at times, but I still love it.
yeah, I'm sure. And what are some of the examples, just for people that don't know, some of the examples of the kind of things you do, and then how did you get into kind of making things for super yachts from there?
After I left art school, I went to work for a company in London that restored 18th century English furniture. And this was the best furniture money could buy. Our ultimate bosses were Partridge Fine Arts in Bond Street at the time. So I got to work on the best furniture money could buy, Chippendale, Adam, Giltwood furniture. And you learn about particular styles of ornament, what it should look like, how it should be carved. Most of my work was that, and was restoring furniture. But after the World Trade Center thing in 2001 or whatever it was, the London antique trade died a death. It was fueled by Americans, really, coming over and buying. This is like the really high-end stuff.
Yeah.
It was fueled by Americans coming over and buying. They just stopped flying. And a lot of the really good antique dealers in London were in their later years anyway. So a lot of them just decided to pack up shop and retire, which sort of lost me an awful lot of clients. At that point, Winch Design then contacted me about some possible work on a super yacht. One sort of stream of work sort of dried up, but then Winch got in touch and asked me to start working on some super yacht projects with them, and it just sort of snowballed from there. And ever since, I've just sort of done an awful lot of work on super yachts through sort of Winch, really.
Really. And yeah. Were you keen to get involved in yachts? Have you got any kind of background in doing things on the water yourself, or was it just, you know, another interesting project that happened to come along?
When I initially sort of went along and met Winch teams and got involved with their projects, I think I realised this is where I wanted to be. The quality of the work that they want and what they ask you to do and produce is what I really want to do. It allows me to produce the work of the best quality I can. I know they're not going to turn around and say to me, which I've had said to me several times, that I do too good a job. They're not going to say that to me. They want the absolute best, and I love that.
Yeah.
And I and that's what I strive for. So it's a really good sort of relationship for me, because it allows me to do what I really, really want to do.
It's interesting. That's not the first time I've heard that, in that I think one of the good things about the soup yacht industry in particular is that, you know, there are clients and designers who are willing to pay for things that other people just aren't, because they take, you know, take such an incredibly long time to make or involve such expensive materials. And it allows a kind of small pool of people to continue making really beautiful things that otherwise just wouldn't exist, I think.
Yeah, it's an absolute gift to me. I can't tell you how grateful I am to have designers of these yachts and these owners that are willing to pay for me to create the work, the art that I do, and give me the time to actually make sure that I create to the highest possible standard. And I know that it's going to be then greatly appreciated, but it's, you know, to me, I can't tell you how important that is to me. I'm so grateful.
And can we talk through your kind of your winning entry? Well, your highly commended entry. I think everyone felt like you should win, but they weren't sure what. So in the end, you were sort of highly commended. But what was the piece that you made, and what was the most difficult part about making it, and how long did it take you to make?
Well, it was a series of about 24 panels that then became the door panels for a super yacht, which is motor yacht and mower. And at the time it was Project Mesa. Again, it was I had the brief from Winch Design that of the ideas that they wanted, and it was sort of quite contemporary sort of textural carving, sort of representing sort of sea, air, sand, you know, that sort of those sort of forms. So they gave me the design briefs. Then I took those design briefs and reworked them and suggested some changes to different panels. So there was about 13 different designs, I think. And the panels had to then be made in oak. So that was the most difficult part of the job, actually, because oak is extremely difficult to carve.
Is it? What makes it? Is it quite because it's hard? This is where my wood knowledge is going to fall down.
Oak is incredibly hard wood to cut. And these days, it's kiln dried to such a sort of a degree that there's very little moisture in it for modern interiors. But the drier it gets, the harder it gets. There's no sort of, when you push the tool through it, there's very little give in the tool. You really have to push it. You really have to, a lot of it is mallet work.
So it's
really
quite kind of physically hard to actually make a mark.
Yeah, it is very physically hard. And these panels, you know, they're you know, a meter wide, 2.3 meters high. So they're big panels. And that allows the door panel to come out of this out of one panel, but also the surrounds, the architrave surrounds, so that the textural sort of carving then runs across the door and onto the architectural surround. But being that size, you were then having to lean over quite a lot to get to the middle of the carving.
Yeah, I guess you need sort of suspending on a harness from the ceiling or something to come down.
It was physically demanding. Because of that, the construction of the panels were made up of strips as well, 20 mil strips. So it wasn't, you know, you can't get oak panels that sort of width in one single block of wood. So also making them in strips keeps them quite stable, quite flat. But then again, that causes another element to the carving in when you've got the grain of one strip running one way and the grain running another way, so you get a rip in the grain. So that complicates the carving even further.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it was a long process.
How long did each panel take? And did anyone help you, or was it literally just you in your studio?
It was me most of the time. I did have help at one point because we needed to try and push the project on a little bit more.
Mm.
But it took a couple of years, and some of the panels took 2-3 weeks to carve. Other panels took probably 4-5 weeks, something like that.
Oh my gosh.
Depending on the complexity of the design, really.
Mm. And how do you, you mentioned oak in this case, how do you select the pieces of wood that you use, and are they kind of brought to you, or do you go out and find them from different suppliers yourself?
It sort of varies. I have a supplier, a really big timber yard that I use for a lot of timber based in the Midlands, and I'll contact them. I'll tell them what I want, and they know that I need it for carving, so they select the best quality they've got in their stock. And then other times, I've got a friend who's a chairmaker in Suffolk, who's got a stock of timber that he keeps that is air dried, so the project I'm working on at the moment is a Grinling Gibbon style carving of fruits and flowers, swags and drops and stuff like that. So I'm using linewood for that, and I've got the linewood from it. So it's a Suffolk felled tree. So it's sort of in terms of environmental aspect, it's quite good. There's hardly any sort of road miles involved in it, and it's a local tree that got felled, and then boarded, and then air dried. So that's another thing as well. If the environmental aspects of the timber I use as well,
yeah.
I try and use locally sourced if I can.
That's really great to be thinking about that. And you mentioned there kind of air dried. Is it presumably much better if it's air dried rather than kiln dried, were you saying, or kind of artificially dried?
There's two ways of drying timber. It's kiln dried or air dried. Air dried takes a bit longer, but it retains a little bit more moisture in the timber, but the timber that dries out over a much longer time, it's a slower process, and that can benefit wood enormously, especially something like lime. Lime really doesn't like being kiln dried. If you kiln dried lime, which often people do, and when you then start to work it can curl up and move an awful lot, whereas if it's air dried it's much more stable timber. I prefer air dried if I can get it. It's much nicer timber to work. It carves much easier.
That's really interesting. And then I wondered, what's your sort of favourite piece that you've ever done?
My favourite piece I've ever done, there's two really. One is a personal piece, which is a copy of a piece of work by Grinling Gibbons. I don't know if you've ever heard of Grinling Gibbons, but Grinling Gibbons is England or UK's greatest ever wood carver. So he was born in 1648 and died in 1721. So he worked for Christopher Wren, Charles II. He worked on all the London churches, Windsor Castle, Hampton Court. And it's the Baroque period. So it's very naturalistic, very bold, big, deep carving. I always wanted to test myself to see how close I could get to carving Gibbon's work. In Trinity College Library in Cambridge, there's some Gibbon's work there, and there's these little scrolling leafworks, so it entwines in and out of itself. And I've always loved this sort of particular element that he carved. So I wanted to test myself to see if I could actually carve it and get close to how he carved it.
Mm.
So I went took the measured drawings, came back and carved it, and it sits above my fireplace. I look at it every day, and I would say I've got it really, really close. And it, in really? Fact, it's a very small piece of carving, but it's probably the most difficult thing I've ever done.
Really? I'd love to see it. You'll have to, if you don't mind sending me a picture on your phone, I'd be amazed to see what it is that, you know, has tested you to the max.
Yeah. Well, it's one piece of wood. It's about 2.25 inches thick, but it's got incredible undercutting where you remove all the waste wood. And there are areas where it's so difficult to get into. And some parts of it are so, so thin that the wood moves.
Wow.
I did it, and I took it back and held it up with the original, and it's pretty damn close. And I would say, if I was in Gibbon's workshop and he looked at it, would he say it's good enough to go on the job? And I think he would have done.
Yeah.
So I'm happy with that.
Yeah.
My other favourite bit of carving is a carving I did with Winch Design for a yacht called Sea Owl, and it's a complete carved wall.
Now, I think I do know that, because I've seen Sea Owl, you know, we've written about that quite often. So yeah. It's interesting that that's you. I wouldn't have known that.
Yeah, no, that's me. It's the carved wall for the main stairway. And it's 11 metres high, 3 metres wide.
Wow.
A tree of life. And it's just an incredible piece of work. And I think it's probably the single bit biggest carving done in a couple of hundred years.
Oh, my gosh.
And I'm incredibly proud of it. It's an amazing piece of work. It turned out really well.
Yeah. Is there anything you ever kind of, I don't know, split and have to start again or struggle with, you know, or is it always just a question of taking your time to get it right?
No, it's always a question of taking its time to get it right. I don't think I've ever been partway through a piece of work, scrapped it and started again.
Mm.
The art of carving is like you have a three-dimensional picture in your head of what you want to produce. And the art of it is actually, you know, it's taking that 3D picture with your hands, reproducing it. But what you see in your head and what the wood allows you to do, there's always going to be differences. It's what the wood will allow you to do. But also, as you're working on something, you change your mind a little bit, or you decide, actually, if I just do it slightly like this, it'd be better.
Mm.
So the work develops. It's very rare that, you know, you'll make a huge mistake. The art of carving is, you make mistakes all the time, but you're getting over them.
Yeah.
You would never know that I'd got something wrong, because it would look great.
Yeah.
But only I would know that I really didn't want it to look like that. I wanted it to look like this. But again, that is very rare, and it comes with years of experience.
Yeah.
Of carving. And it's having the confidence. Carving is all about confidence. And it's having the confidence to remove the wood and actually get to what you want to leave.
That's interesting talking about, because I wouldn't have thought that without you saying it. But actually, I guess it is quite nerve-wracking, because once you've taken it away, you can't put it back. So you have to be fairly confident in what you're doing to do the kind of bigger strokes and that sort of thing.
It is a real, I mean, you obviously need to know how to cut wood and how to hold and handle the chisels, but it's having the confidence to be able to take that big chisel and whack a great bit off, or, you know, or sort of attack the wood in that way. You can't be timid. I mean, if you are, it's just going to take you forever to do something. So, learning to carve is learning about being confident in removing wood and shaping it. Like I said, that comes with years of experience, really.
And that sort of brings me quite nicely onto, you know, you're talking about years of experience and the kind of the skill and the expertise involved in what you do. How many, you know, how many people like you are there in the UK? Is it something that, you know, you have a number of contemporaries, or do you feel like it's something that is dying out, or, you know, what's the kind of scene like at the moment?
It is a very small trade. There are a number of carvers, but the what I feel sad about, in a way, is that there are a lot of carvers. There are a lot of people that go, and most people get trained now at City and Guilds Art School in London, and then they leave there thinking that they are, yeah, really good carvers. But in fact, unfortunately, a lot of times they're not. They have a basic knowledge and understanding of how to carve. And I'm saddened sometimes that the trade is dying a little bit, and there's a real lack of understanding of line. I talk about line and form, and shaping, you know, shape and modelling, and producing really nice line and form in a piece of carving is really what makes a difference. And there's a lot of people that I feel don't really understand that.
And is that from the teaching, or is that from, you know, not doing projects as complex as those you do, so they don't really understand, you know, where does that come from?
I think that needs to be taught to a certain extent. And it's also gaining experience. I would say that to learn how to use your tools and to cut wood takes 2 or 3 years. But to learn what to do, what to cut, what forms to shape, that takes decades.
How many years in total would you say you've been carving for now? I don't know when you kind of start, when you count the beginning, but
I started carving when I was about 19.
Yeah.
And I've just turned 60 a couple of weeks ago. Wow. So that's 41 years.
Wow.
And professionally, I've been carving. So I started when I was 19. I went to art school when I was 19. So I left there in 85, so I was about 21. So it's just under 40 years I've been carving professionally.
Wow. It's amazing. Well, your pieces are so beautiful. I mean, my final question was just how it felt, you know, to receive the commendation, if it was something you were expecting, if you knew much about the nomination, or was it all a bit of a surprise?
I was deeply honoured, to be honest. Any recognition for my work, I love what I do and I would do it anyway, but I am deeply honoured to receive the award. I heard through Winch Design about it, and then I wasn't sure I'd be able to apply, because you have to sign an NDA working with Winch on particular projects. But then Winch got in touch and said that they were going to nominate me for the award, which they did, and I was, like I say, deeply honoured and incredibly grateful for it. You know, it's so nice to have the recognition for that, for the craft that people like me do.
That seems like a good place to leave it, Paul. It's been wonderful chatting with you. Thank you so much, and so interesting to learn more about actually how it all works.
Oh, you're welcome. I've enjoyed it.
Thank you for listening to this week's Big Boat interview. This episode was mixed and produced by Adam Geist and is a production by Boat International Media. Don't forget to tune in every week for news and updates from the Boat Briefing podcast, and we'll see you next time.